Throughout the solar system and extending to interstellar regions beyond. This is the Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I know you could be doing a million other things, but you chose to be here. And I appreciate that from the bottom of my heart. I truly do. I'm here because you have a right to know, and I'm here because you matter. I know everybody that is subscribed to the K-Files received a special report during the week about John Vasquez. I don't have an update, but for those of you who are not subscribed to the K-Files, you see you missed out on it, didn't you? John Vasquez has been a guest on this show a number of times. He's the guy that wrote the book about a UFO battle that he says he witnessed and in fact was part of and was injured in, a UFO battle in 1977 that he says took place at Fort Benning. And it's been one of those stories that just won't go away, and yet lots of people who could come forward don't. Two have, as far as I know. Command Sergeant Major Norton, James Norton, went public and said, yes, it was true. He was there. He was part of it. He, too, was injured. And 6 months after that, he died under very mysterious circumstances, 6 months after going public with it. But John has been public with it now for a long, long time and wrote the book about it. However, a few weeks ago, he was here on the show, and he talked about having contact with a person in Army intelligence, and he talked about how it seemed to him that they were kind of setting him up to get him to say some things publicly that they could then deny having said. And this week, I got notified that a couple of weeks ago, he had a stroke. And it was a massive stroke. The last I heard was that he was in a coma and was not responsive. So let me just say this, though. I've been there. I've been in what they thought was a coma. And even though I could hear them talking, you know, they were talking about how I was in a coma and I didn't know what was going on, I certainly did. I heard everything they said. I could recognize whose voice was who. I knew exactly what was going on around me. I just couldn't respond. And so let me just say, you know, for any friends and family of John Vasquez. When you go to visit, don't just talk about him, talk to him. There's every possibility he may be hearing you and just not able to respond to you. So be sure you talk to him as well. I mentioned the K-Files. If you're not subscribed, it's one of the things we do because you matter. And it's absolutely free to everybody. It's our newsletter. And all you have to do to be getting it is subscribe. Just go over to my website, click where it says K-Files.
The music used here at the Kevin Smith Show is from independent artists. Most of it from independent artists at musicalley.com. Go over to musicalley.com. Check out thousands of artists and thousands of great independent tunes. Musicalley.com.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and this evening we're privileged to have as our guest Joe Montaldo, and he'll be joining us here in just a moment. He's online, patiently waiting, and we'll bring him up here in just a minute. A couple of quick things. You cannot tell whether, you know, I kept saying actually for some time that I planned to be in Nashville at this time. And that didn't work out, and I am in my studio. Okay, so just so you'll know. Also, we announced that the members' subscriptions would reopen on Monday. They will. Monday's not over yet. So that's going to happen. It'll be after the show tonight. That will reopen. And those of you who have been trying to join, well, this is going to be your opportunity, all right? And we look forward to having you in our members community. Joe Montaldo is someone that I think most of you know, not only from this show. He's been a guest on this show a number of times, but also from his own broadcasts and the fact that he owns the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, one of the networks that carries the Kevin Smith Show. And he is also well known as a UFO paranormal investigator. And, well, the list could go on and on, but we get lots of requests to have Joe on the show. We've had some recent requests to have Joe on the show. And so Joe is on the show. Joe, welcome. We're glad to have you.
Oh, Kevin, I always love being here, man. I always have a great time when I'm hanging out with y'all. It is. I always have a good time. I always get good feedback. You got a great audience. And I like the fact that they're not scared to write to me. I've done a lot of radio in my time, and it amazes me on which shows people will actually write to me and which won't. Now, I've done two. I'm not going to mention their names, but they're, you know, 4 or 5 million listeners at a shot, and got like one person write to me. I'm like, come on, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. Mm-hmm. But hey, it happens sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you know, it, and you've been doing radio long enough to know this, that there's no predicting. I mean, like, we can have a show that is absolutely gangbusters and get one call.
Yeah, you know, that's something else. I will never figure that out. I will get... we do a bunch of shows, and all of a sudden you'll get just calls from everywhere. And then you'll do a show where you want calls, and it's like crickets in the background. You're like, what the hell? Yeah. You know, you're like, come on, people, just don't leave me hanging in the wind like
this. Well, that's how you tell whether you're a pro or whether it's a hobby.
Oh, yeah.
If you can get through that and come back tomorrow, you're a pro.
See, I enjoy it. I usually, you know, but I keep stuff nowadays, you know, for guest cancellations and stuff. And I know you do, but I keep materials on the side that, you know, stuff I might date. I might want to talk about iCar pet peeves that I might just want to rant about for a while. You know, so I always keep a list of stuff, and it just makes it easy. I just grab the list. Well, where was I last time? Let's start from right here.
We'll start where we left off.
The citizens' hearings. You know, I've got lots of good to say about it. I've got lots of bad to say about it. I could spend 2 hours by myself. So.
Well, now you recently had a guest no-show, and that was John Vasquez.
Yeah.
After he had been on my show, you asked him to be on your show, and he was a no-show.
Well, what actually happened was he was on your show, and then I had him on my show like the following couple of days after you had him.
I see.
And we kind of picked up from part of your conversation that y'all were having, and we got into that, and then we got right into the middle of the alien battle. I mean, right into the middle of that and some of the government conspiracies. We were right smack, and of course, we ran out of time. So the following Wednesday, I was going to have him back on. And, you know, I said, well, John, I'll just bring you back next Wednesday. We'll pick up the conversation. I'll move the guest that I was having on, which is a friend of mine, to another slot and have him on, which is what I did. And then come Wednesday, you know, John's nowhere to be seen. I'm like, wow. And John, I've done, you know, quite a few shows with John over the last 10 years. And he's always been a show. He's always eager and ready to go and, you know, always got, you know, ready to talk. And I'm like, wow. So about 10 minutes before the show started, a mutual friend of ours, someone off of his Facebook, sent me a letter and said that he had had a stroke and he was unresponsive. And I see someone made a post on his page yesterday or the day before that he's had, and he's still unresponsive. Now, I've gotten a lot of email about this because, you know, we were into some pretty heavy stuff when the show ended that night, and Kevin had just done some pretty heavy stuff with him a couple of days earlier. you know, I know there's a lot of rumors floating around out there that, you know, somebody might have took him out. It might have been something government related. Guys, I really don't know at this point. It may have been he just ate too many fatty foods. I mean, you know, I've had to get a stand. I know Kevin's had some problems. That, you know, we get older, we get worked up guys. You know, we get kind of worked up when we do these shows.
Yeah, I've been asked that too. You know, do you think he was targeted? You know what? I don't know. And I will say this, though. Isn't it an absolute shame that we even have to wonder about that? We shouldn't even have to wonder, did our government do him in? Unfortunately, here in the land of the free, we do wonder whether that's the case. But I just don't have any idea. And, I mean, it's entirely possible. I don't know how old he is, but he's not a young guy. And, you know, so I don't know. It's entirely possible this could just be, you know, a natural occurrence in his health, something that just went wrong and caused him to have the stroke. Isn't it a shame that we have to even wonder?
It is, too. It really is. And, I mean, to everybody who sent me emails on this, I know that on both shows there was some, we had gotten in some pretty in-depth stuff. And, yes, the both shows were in the same week, so maybe it was a bit much. But I got to be honest. I've heard most of what I've heard Kevin and I both talk to him about is not stuff that we haven't talked about before. There may have been some bits and pieces in there that may have been new to the shows. But in general, most of the data was stuff that either was in the book or stuff that we had talked about or that somewhere along the line had, you know, been talked about before. So I don't know, but I know a lot of his friends seem to think it's something really, really fishy. You know, the people I've seen making posts seem to think it's something fishy. But, you know, until someone from John's family or until John recovers, we may never know. And being if he's had a stroke that he's unresponsible for this long, I can't see the recovery being a short road. You know, if he does recover, I would imagine it's going to take him some time to get back to where he was prior to this. Any time a stroke puts you in a coma for a week or more, you're usually going to have a hard time recovering from it.
Let me say
not
this.
Not always, but, you know.
In my last telephone conversation with him, he was really pushing pretty hard and trying to break some information loose from this Army intelligence contact. And I told him, I said, man, look, number one, you're not going to. It isn't going to happen.
Yeah,
you're not
going to
break that information loose. Number two, if you are really, really close to that information and you're pushing hard like this, be very, very careful.
It's
and,
funny, I told him the same thing.
You told him the same thing, yeah. And I said, you know, if this really is a frame-up that they tried on you, there's one reason only, and that's because you're right on target. So be careful. And that was the last conversation we had. Next thing I heard was when he, you know, I was informed that he had had the stroke. But again, that doesn't mean anything. And, you know, Joe, you and I swim in an ocean that really, if somebody sneezes, there'll be a lot of people that say it's a government conspiracy. Just in the ocean, in the universe in which you and I operate.
Oh, yeah.
And that also is unfortunate. You know, the government doesn't have lily white hands on this and on this kind of stuff. That's true. But I'll tell you something. They get credit for a whole lot more bad stuff than they actually do.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. They really do. Well, it was like with John Mack when he got hit by the drunk driver. It really amazed me that nobody threw up a conspiracy flag there. Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still, I got to be honest with y'all, I'm still kind of floored by that because if the government was going to do something, that would be typical. I mean, that would just be typical government way of doing it. I mean, isn't that how Princess Di bit it? So you just never know is what it comes right down to. We'll never, ever really know because I guess nobody's going to volunteer the information to us. Which I wish somebody out there would, but this case I'd like to know because I mean we were getting in some pretty good stuff and we were talking about some you know some pretty in depth stuff with the contact itself or with the event that happened that night. And then bam, you know, for a follow-up show, all of a sudden he's got a strike. I mean, it does look. I can see what.
Well, yeah, you look, the timing is strange.
Yeah, it's just poor timing, especially since he had just come off doing two shows with us. Mm-hmm. I find it, you know, but hey, it could be just what it is.
It could be. It could be. But let me say this. People don't need to be afraid, and in my opinion, they don't need to be afraid to talk about what they've seen. They don't need to be afraid to talk about, you know, their investigation into it or what experiences they have had. That's not it. But I'll tell you something. Where you do need to be concerned is if you're standing out here shaking your fist at the government and saying, you don't scare me. Well, on the one hand, almost nothing scares me. On the other hand, I'm not a fool. And, you know, if you challenge, even if you're not scared of a bear, if you challenge him to a fight, you may have to prove that you're better than him. And, you know, it's just not smart to challenge. And I'm not saying John did that. I don't think he did. But I'm just a word of caution, because I have had guests to do that. And, you know, that's not smart to challenge somebody. You know, if you challenge somebody or threaten somebody, you may have to prove up.
And you may. And that's the thing. I mean, you know, I tell people all the time, if you think you're on good foot and you can get information from a government person or someone that's in the government that's not going to, you know, basically be putting your life on the line to do it, go for it. But if you even feel like there's a chance that there may be prize law on you or your family, leave it alone. Let other people like us and other people that are in the field used to dealing with this deal with it. Mm-hmm. Because frankly, there's some stuff, you know, you should just stay away from. You're asking for trouble. And unfortunately, it's just how it is. I mean, even I've been warned a couple of times about particular topic matters that I shouldn't be talking about. You know, I'll get a call or we'll get followed around in an SUV for a while, or somebody will show up at a work site or something and tell me something. But, you know, it's usually because it is topic matter that is probably swaying opinion. And that's, you know, well, they just don't want that.
No. You know, and over the years, there have been people line up on both sides of the fence on this, but you know, I have said, you've heard me say it, Joe. Mm-hmm. If something is classified, then I'm not trying to pry the lid off of it. I may not agree that it should be classified, but I'm not trying to pry the lid off of anything that's classified. And I have actually said on this show to guests, you know, they'd start to tell me something, and I would say, look, if this is classified, you don't need to say this. Now, I've been criticized for that, but let me tell you why I do that. Because when you do reveal stuff that's classified, everybody likes to know it. Everybody wants to know it. But that's not worth your life. And so I have warned guests before, don't do it.
You know, and it's funny you bring that up, because there's a couple people that I've met over the last 15 years in fairly good places. I got two good friends that work for, two of the different airplane contractors, you know, we'll just say Lockheed and Boeing. And what's funny about it is, because I have such a high security clearance from the Navy, they don't seem to get as much shit, because I guess, you know, we can talk about it like...
You know what? We're on AM and FM stations. You can't say that.
Oh, did I say that? I apologize. Sorry about that, guys. I apologize for that. I'll watch my mouth there. I forgot about that. I'm so used to just internet on Saturdays, I got to watch that. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. I did not mean to say that. That just popped out of my bad mouth. Bad joke. Sorry about that, Kevin. All right. I will pay attention to
the rest. Well, you know, if the UFO Paranormal Network cancels my show over that, I'll have to talk to you about it.
I know, huh? Well, see, I know I have a 7-second delay, so they got a little box over here that's a little software that catches certain words, and it actually catches phrases too, which I find really interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it does it, but it works really well so far. I have not gotten in trouble with the FAA, so.
FCC.
Sorry, yeah. See, I knew that's when I said it.
I never get in trouble with the FAA.
Yeah. Well, I got actually the reason I said FAA, I was thinking about it because one of my security clearances gave me a FAA license from working on avionics and electronics in the Navy. Uh-huh. And for some reason, it was just in the back of my head when I said it. But yes, I do try to, and even myself, and I've been on my co-host, or I should have my one of my co-hosts has been on me about one of the shows we're taking is being picked up by other networks. So I've been trying to tone down any of that mm-hmm. language, but it's powerful.
Yeah, this one's being taken by a bunch of them, about 23 million people listening tonight.
And I hate, I you know, now that we do politics on Saturdays, ooh, it's hard for me to behave. I'll have to tell y'all, I got to be honest about it.
Okay, really let's, well, we've got about 3 minutes here until we go to break. About
what was
two
I
going to
say,
though,
before I went and opened
We were talking about classified stuff. Mm. And
that's what
you
I
know,
wanted to say real quick.
I'm like everybody else. I'm curious. I'd like to know, just because I'm curious. But that's not worth anybody's life,
and it's not. It really isn't. But I had met somebody. We were in Stevensville last year for the Stevensville All Women's Festival, and I had talked with some of the actual Stevensville witnesses, and they had told me stuff, Kevin, I had never heard before. Mm-hmm. And the more I listen to these guys, the more I'm thinking, oh no, I don't think this is ET. So my assistant state director, who's actually a Texas director now. He was going around videotaping the whole thing for me. So I actually took the email, hooked it to my phone, sent the whole thing to my friend over there. She listened to it. And when she heard the part about the two rows of engines, they were 8 and 8. And then it was at cruising speed, they were going red. And when it took off, it started glowing white. And then she heard the guy say about the two chase planes that were staying on the side. She knew exactly what it was. She even sent me a copy of the flight plan. She said that's why it was headed for Bush, because she showed me the flight line between the two areas, and most of it is most of it is a no-fly zone, but the other part is pretty much just rural nothingness. And she said that's why they fly in and out of there. It's we call it the Aurora. They don't actually call it that anymore. They have a different name for it, which I can't say because that is classified. But they do have a different name for it. It's a high-altitude supersonic aircraft capable of speeds upwards of Mach 50. So it's basically a transcontinental jet that goes into space, drops out of space, and it can leave L.A. and be over Moscow over in about 8 minutes. Now, what is it for? It's anybody's guess. I'm sure our government has lots and lots of stuff they can use it for, but I do know it exists now officially. Also, we know DARPA had done those high-speed tests just recently. What they got up to, Kevin? Mach 13, I think it was?
Mach 14.
Mach 14 before they went rolling, so...
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting, isn't it? They got to Mach 14. First, it's well, let's take a break. We'll come back. I'm going to tell you what's weird about all of that in just a moment when we come back. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and let me apologize to our affiliate stations. The automation software ended that break a few seconds early. I apologize for that. Don't know why it happened. It's demon-possessed, I suppose. Anyway, we're talking with Joe Montaldo, and as we went away for break, you had just mentioned, Joe, the fairly recent test of the hypersonic vehicle.
Yeah.
And they announced that it could reach speeds of Mach 14. Now, what's interesting about that is the Blackbird, its top speed is still classified.
Yes, it is. And I can tell you this for sure. I was stationed with a friend of mine down in Texas. I was on temporary HARP duty down there while I was waiting assignment for the Navy. It was an Air Force base, very big one. And he was out on patrol one night on watching, you know, walking around B-52s, which, by the way, they have these circles they paint around these planes. If you walk inside of them, they shoot you.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of surprised me, by the way. I have to tell you all this. But long story short, we seen an SR come blazing by. The nose cone was glowing red on this thing. So I got to ask some questions because I was an Airedale in the Navy, and I got to ask him questions. And all the pilots and all the techs told me the same thing. It has to be doing a minimum speed of Mach 6 for the plane for the nose to glow, like they said, minimum. They said, as far as they know, the plane definitely did somewhere between 8 and 10 for sure. And that's just, you know, them talking to pilots. But no one anywhere, as far as I could tell, has ever listed a officially rated speed for this thing. I couldn't.
But they announced to the news that this new hypersonic vehicle could reach Mach 14, and that's weird. Secondly, in their test, it functioned just fine, and as soon as it hit Mach 14, it disappeared from radar, and they said, "Oh, well, it crashed." I bet it didn't. I bet it didn't crash.
I bet you it doubled its speed is what happened. they might have had to shoot it down because it was headed for enemy territory and they couldn't slow it down fast enough.
But it just disappeared from radar.
Yeah.
You know.
I heard a lot of rumors about that plane, a lot of different stuff. I asked a couple of different recovery teams that I know of if they knew anybody doing any recovery work anywhere in those areas. They're like, no, nothing's been going on. Nobody's been called in. Even they thought it was a bit suspicious because two of these teams – actually work for the Air Force and for security agents recovering aircraft. That's what they do. And he said they were really surprised that they didn't get any calls because as best they could tell, they were watching it in flight and said they thought it was a crash, but then they really didn't know. Even they said there seemed to be something a little suspicious about it because it was like a cutaway and then they were like showing some old pictures of some crash from – the guy said he actually recognized the crash that they were showing on TV. I was like, oh, okay, well, that's interesting to know. But that doesn't even surprise me there, Kevin. I mean, you know, that's one of them things. You know, they do stuff like that. I used to think they did that stuff for me and you. Just, hey, look, we got these really – no, I don't think they do anymore. I think that was just to show the Russians and the Chinese, we're playing around with y'all today, and we're going to fly this thing at Mach 14 just to let you know that it easily can do that. And then we want you to keep your radars fixed on it because we're going to show you something else it can do. And then, of course, you know, because you didn't wonder right after. This is kind of another coincidence, ladies and gentlemen, and I never believe in coincidence. Right after this test, about 3 months after this test, China switched its tunes with the United States. It started coming down on North Korea about misbehaving with us. And all of a sudden, wants all kind of treaties and has even decided to give concessions in the China Sea where they're having problems with Japan, Taiwan, and Guam and a few other places over some islands. You just got to wonder. What was it that they actually saw?
I don't know if you caught the show that I did about a couple of shows I did about that test, and I maintained that the reason they announced it in the press was to send a message to nations not particularly favorable to us, and it was the message was watch this. And I had, you know, there were a number of callers that disagreed with that and said they didn't think that was the case. But I do. I still think that was the case. All right, I want to move away from that. I want to move to Indian Springs, Nevada. Several years ago, when I lived in Phoenix, a guy who had been Air Force security and was retired asked me one day, We were talking about the show and the things that I talk about on the show. He said, you ever do any shows on Area 51? And I said, yes, I have. And we talked about it a little bit. And he said, what do you... And he just kind of paused, and then he says, what do you know about Indian Springs? I said, nothing. What is it? What is an Indian Springs? And he said, well, maybe you ought to just look into Indian Springs. So I started looking into Indian Springs, and I ran across on the internet material written by Charles Hall. And subsequently then, I had him on the air, and I've had him on the air several times. I've met him in person. I've interviewed him face-to-face. Heck of a nice guy. But this is the story. This is the place where the story about the tall white aliens, takes place. And, you know, it's just fascinating, the story. I never, ever have had the feeling that Charles Hall was lying. And yet, at the same time, I've had difficulty wrapping my mind around and accepting all of the story about the tall whites. But you also have had that same kind of situation. And you and your group launched an investigation into the story. And what did you find out?
You know, it's interesting because the first time I heard about Charles Hall, it was you know, given some information given to me, and I was kind of like, okay. And then we brought him on. We did a guest thing like we always do, and we did the first thing, and I was listening to him the whole time. I'm thinking, this guy really sounds like he means this. But the whole time I'm listening to him, I'm thinking there is just something not right. And I told him this on air. I was very honest with him and up front. And I said, I said, you sound like you've been brainwashed or tagged or something. I said, it just doesn't sound right. So I met up with them. I think it was in Laughlin, Nevada. It was the second to third last of the Laughlin, Nevada conferences. And I talked to him there, and he was doing a lecture, and he was talking. So I decided to run voice stress analysis while I was there just to see, you know, what came out of it. I wasn't looking to see if he was lying. I was looking to see when he talked about the aliens, if there was physical signs of duress or stress, which there was, by the way. So, you know, as far as I could tell, Charles Hall believed everything that came out of his mouth. But, you know, I looked in this. There was some stuff about the case that didn't sound right. So we started pushing. We started pushing on the air. We started pushing people around the country. And I started making a plea for people in the state of Nevada, especially in Las Vegas, where they said they had seen these aliens at. Lo and behold, out of the blue, two state troopers contact us. What did they call them? Anyway, they're the ones, anytime there's someone special in town that's going to be in a casino, they're present. And they're also there for when they move money from one area to the other. That's what they do, and they're there a lot, by the way. Mm-hmm. So they write to me, and they say, you know, they tell me about these people and these ones getting into cabs and all, and they're very sincere about what they're saying. And by the way, I thought it was odd. Neither trooper knew each other, which kind of threw me for a loop since they were both working the same hotel. They admitted that they knew each other like as in passing, you know, seeing each other at work and stuff, but they weren't partners and they really didn't know each other. So I just kind of...
Having been in law enforcement, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah. So I was like, well, okay, that's two independent witnesses then. Well... After I announced them, a gentleman writes in, actually calls in to the show, and he's a taxi cab driver. Mm-hmm. He's talking about the night that the trooper's talking about. And he's talking about, you know, what it looked like when it walked out the car. Now, I got to say, the descriptions they give are not exactly what Charles Hall says, but it's closer than I personally thought it was going to be. I have to be honest about this. Mm-hmm. I thought we were going to find out that these were one of the taller grays, and I'm still not convinced that it's not 100% not one of the taller grays, but... they did put them around the 6'8 to 7'2 range, which Kevin and I were talking about earlier. We would have been a child of one of the tall whites, because the older they get, the taller they get, right, if I remember correctly. And they get up in the 9-foot range. So it's possible, you know, with makeup and the right clothes and all, they could tell. Now, they did, most of the people that described them describe them as a ghostly white or pale white. Two guys actually called them vampires, even though they didn't see any fangs or anything, but because they were kind of tall, slender, and pale looking, that's what they called them. They said they were very skittish and acted very strangely. Now, so now we've got two troopers and three taxi cab drivers that are witnesses to seeing these things at different events. So now there's actually some witnesses in Vegas that are corroborating Charles Hall's story. So still for me, and I got to be honest about this, still for me, is this an elaborate setup to throw us off the trail of something else, or is this really a legitimate ET case? And as far as all the witnesses and Charles Hall are concerned, it's 100% real. But there's something since day one that has just bugged me about this whole thing. It sounds too much like those fluffy, wuffy cover dreams they used to give to people back in the 50s. I don't know what it is, Kevin, and I'm probably wrong, and I wouldn't have a problem admitting it if I am, but there's something about it that still sticks in my craw. I don't know why, it just does. Even with these additional witnesses, which they really are corroborating Charles's account. And then there's a gentleman, I can't remember his name, he's a sergeant, that I met just recently, about a year ago, who says he was on the range with Charles Hall and had seen him from a distance. He was watching Charles and then through the binoculars at about a mile and a half or 2 miles. He said, so, you know, he thought they were human, but he noticed that they were awful tall and they walked kind of different. And every now and then they seemed to move really fast, like they would be like a mile and then they would be a half mile. He said, and it really bothered him. And he only watched them two or three times, but even he gave the same basic account. So normally I would say that's enough witnesses, but I don't know, Kevin.
You know, after I ran across Charles Hall and I had him on the show and I interviewed him and I got his story about the tall whites, I went back to the retired Air Force guy that had said, you need to check Indian Springs. And I asked him if he had ever been based at Indian Springs, and he just raised his eyebrows. And I said, are you familiar with the tall white aliens? And he just raised his eyebrows again, kind of cocked his head, smiled, and walked away.
Yeah. That's one of them, if I tell you, I'm going to have to kill you kind of things.
Mm-hmm. So I think if you just stand back and sort of take in the whole story, that overall, my assessment of it is, as strange as it may seem, it seems to have some traction, and there seems to be some evidence that it may be true.
It does seem to be some evidence. For me, what I guess I'm looking for is this one of the groups of the hybrids, or is this, because you know a lot of people don't realize it. They always hear the 3 foot grays, but they got grays that run in a 7-8 foot range. There's at least three height levels of grays that we know of. There's little 3 foot ones. There's a 4 or 5 foot range, and then there's a 7 to 9 foot range.
But Charles describes these people as looking human, basically.
He does. But when he describes the hair,
wispy.
He says it's kind of thin and wispy. Uh-huh. And a lot of what he says really does sound like some of the hybrid descriptions. But since they all seem to be one color, which I find odd to start off with, because I would think on any race there would be some kind of diversity in colors. I know with the reptilians, humans, and grays there are. There's shades of color in the race.
Even my own kids when they were born, because I'm such a mixture. Yes, my own features are like my dad's, and you know that's the German Celtic side of the family. However, you know, I've got a whole bunch of mixture of other stuff, including Cherokee. When my daughter was born, she looked Mexican. Dark skin and very dark hair. And I would say she looked Native American, except her features did not look Cherokee. Her features look Mexican. And so, you know, even amongst us, now today she's not that way. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Joe Montaldo. As we went away for break, Joe and I were talking about the story about the tall whites, you know, the tall white aliens that Charles Hall brought to us, and in his writings and in his radio appearances. And I was saying, Joe, that even amongst us who are, you know, I'm not white, but people say I am, and you're not white either, but people say you are, you know. Yeah. I mean, I've got, you look at the people that are considered to be white people, most of us are such a mixture that from generation to generation, you can have other appearances expressed. And so I would not think these are hybrids because of that.
Well, they probably aren't. It's just, it's so hard to see. You know, I would like to just get, you know, another person on the base to see them. It would be such a nice thing to have, because right now I would have to list them as some relations to the Greys, but only because of one particular reason. Best we can tell, the Greys really just don't let E.T. go roaming around the planet. It's one of the reasons they're probably here, because the reptilians and humans are probably easily aggravatable, we'll put it like that. And from what Charles has said about this particular race, they seem easily aggravatable as well. So it's hard to think that they would be here without those races knowing or interacting with them or having something to do with them. And some fish, you know, some fashion having something to know about them. So we did this a couple of months back. We had put a thing out to some of our contactees and asked them if they would ask next time they were with any of the races if they knew about the tall whites. Everybody came back with a no. So that kind of bothered me. But a lot of them came back with a no, but said it's not what we think they are, which means absolutely nothing. Just what that means. I don't know what to think about it, because really, we're not getting any firm answers other than the fact that they're the other races don't seem to know they're here, and I just can't even fathom that idea. Mm-hmm. You know, not knowing what the technology the Greys possess for sure, I can't see how the Greys wouldn't know. You know, and especially if they were going and coming, you know, leaving the planet and going and coming like they say they do, I couldn't see how the other races wouldn't know. So I'm thinking there might not be as far off as Charles Halls and him thinks they are. It's just maybe they're cousins. You know, there are tall white grays. There are white grays, and there's actually short white grays too. There's blue grays, there's brown grays, there's white grays, and there's several shades in between there. But there's not really gray grays, by the way. Just so y'all know that. Grays are really not gray. In case y'all didn't know that. It's a misnomer. It's a Hollywood thing. That, mm-hmm. Because of the blue plasma they eat, it tends to change the color of their skin. Even the white ones will sometimes take on like a light or a cobalt blue, whereas the brown ones may take a much darker turn. And the other ones, which I like to call translucent, anytime they eat it, they go from almost a clear color to a dark, weird kind of bluish black color. So there's lots of tones up in there. So I'm just not a hunter, and we do know that the Greys do have 7 and 9 foot, and they're white. So is this an offshoot of them? Was this something to do with them? I know two of the craft they described were saucer-type craft. We know the Greys use saucer-type craft. So, I just don't know is really what it comes down to. So we're going to keep pushing it. Hopefully somebody along the line will see something or give us something that we haven't been able to find yet. Right now, though, I would just classify them as another type of Grey. Because there just doesn't seem to be any other information about them. But as far as Charles knows, they don't abduct anybody, and they do have their children with them.
Mm-hmm.
Which really I find very strange. I don't find it unbelievable or anything, because I think once we become a deep spacefaring race, where that you're going to be, you know, even at light speeds or fascinating speeds, you're still going to be crossing months or even years worth of space, I can see having your families with you. Especially if it's going to be a one-way trip, or a lot of people seem to think Earth is a jumping point to Andromeda, which may or not be true. I don't know, but it could be. A lot of people say this planet is the last civilized stopping point before you make the jump to Andromeda. That may be true.
So we're a rest stop.
It kind of sounds that way sometimes. That we're like, you know, this is where you stop and water your horses before you go on the rest of the trip across the desert.
Yeah, this is where you stop and you know, there's restrooms and snack machines.
Pardon me. Say, come on in here.
You know, got a map that says you are here.
Yeah, you know, yeah. And you, so you like a little human delicacy. There you go. There's a few of them you can snack on while you're here as well. I mean, it's all around good thing, you know. It's funny to me, but it may actually be true.
Why would anybody want to be going over to Andromeda?
Andromeda's quite a bit bigger than us. See, that's another thing humans always do. We're the biggest thing. No, actually, we're not. We're not even like a middle-sized galaxy. When Andromeda finally comes, it's going to eat us like we were a snack. In a billion years, it's going to absorb the Milky Way like it was a snack, rearrange all of our planets, deposit them all around the Andromedan galaxy, and we will become part of Andromeda. Of course, none of us will be alive to see it, but still, it is going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. There's no way around it.
My God, you have now started a brand new wave of terror and fear on the Internet.
Y'all gonna all
Montaldo says Andromeda's going to eat the Milky Way. What's the date for this?
No, I can see it now. I was getting all kind of emails. What was it? A couple weeks ago about asteroids flying around and Earth wanting them to NASA wants to snatch Earthoids and put them in near Earth orbit.
Uh-huh.
People are freaking over that, man. I'm like, guys, I don't think they're planning on parking them near the satellite system. I mean, come on, even NASA's not that stupid.
No, they really are going to do it.
I know they're going to do it. I just hope they're going to keep it out past the moon and not try to bring it inside. Because if something breaks or busting apart, they're risking taking out tons. You know, it might be intentional. They might bring one near Earth and let it take out most of our enemies and friend satellites. Whoops, sorry, guys. I did not know that was going
to
happen.
One of their proposals is to put it in orbit around the moon. Now, let's just think about that. Put it in orbit around the moon. Now we have its swing and gravitational pull interacting with the moon in its interaction with the Earth. That could really screw up some stuff.
Yeah, it actually could, too. And the more I hear about it, the more I think if they're going to do this, they need to do this away from here. You know, out near Zone 11 or somewhere like that, one of the other places, just not here.
Well, I find this really weird. We're not going back to the moon, period. That's it. We ain't going. Okay?
Nope.
But we have a plan to put an asteroid in orbit around it. Why?
Yeah.
Is it that perhaps we were indeed told by aliens to get off the moon and stay off the moon and don't come back? And so if we have a big enough asteroid out there in orbit around the moon, we can have a base where we can engage them.
You got to wonder. You really do. I mean, you got to wonder about all of this because it does seem to be we don't want to go back to the moon. Oh, well, I shouldn't say we don't want to go back. We're just not going back. What I find more interesting about this is Japan, China, and India said, well, we're going to go to the moon. We're going to go to the moon. We're going to go. All of a sudden, they don't want to go to the moon. They really wanted to go to the moon. I'm kind of wondering, you know, China's all but dropped the moonshot. They were working towards it. They were building a program to go to the moon.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, they're like, well, maybe we shouldn't go to the moon. Why? Why wouldn't y'all go if y'all could go? I mean, only one country's ever done it, and that's us.
So there's not but one alien on the moon, but he's really bad.
He's bad.
Tough. He's from Texas. Yeah, he's from Texas, man.
He's a Texas alien. I don't know. I mean, the stuff I hear about this all sounds crazy, but then knowing our government the way I do, you just got to wonder what's really going on. And then it is possible that we have a base on the moon, and that's why we want to put it there, because we already have a base there, and we can work right from that location. You know, we'll know right off the bat what's really going on when we see what kind of asteroid they actually capture. If this is some kind of asteroid that can make fuel or energy and they're parking it by the moon, you can bet your buns we've got a base somewhere out around there that we're going to be fueling up. But still, we don't know. It's still anybody's guess.
Well, and, you know, we'll never know. All we'll know is we're paying for it, but we'll never know.
They'll be like, oh, well, thank you for your cooperation and your money and your need to know. Excuse me, pups. Sorry about that, y'all. My dogs decided they must want to go outside or something. Yeah, that's what it was. Hey, we're live on air. Sorry, guys. They're usually not around.
All right, look, we have to step away for a break. And when we come back, we're going to open up the telephone lines for you to participate in tonight's show and to jump into this conversation. You have an opportunity here to talk with Joe Montaldo, and we'll do that right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're delighted you're here. You have my sincere sympathy for whatever it is that kept you away from the first hour, and my most sincere wishes, hopes, dreams, and prayers that you never suffer that kind of trauma again. We are talking this evening with Joe Montaldo, and the telephone lines are open. 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. That would be the number to call. And we'd love to hear from you. I know you have some questions and maybe some comments you'd like to make. Please remember that if you are outside of the USA, now that's the operative word, outside of the USA and outside of Canada. In other words, you're somewhere else. You're not in the USA. You're not in Canada. We know then that international long-distance calls can be expensive. And so we have an additional option for you. And that option is go over to my website. And on my website, if you scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show. And right above that picture, you'll see the link. It says flash message, okay? So that way you don't have to make an international long-distance call. And I hope some of you will avail yourselves of the flash messages, okay? And as a matter of fact, I've got one flashing right now. Let's see. Joe, Tara in the UK. Well, I guess it's Tara or Tara, T-A-R-A. Would like to know, she says, why did you not go to Nashville as planned? That's another story. That is a Tara, that's an ancient Chinese secret. And but thank you for asking. By the way, Joe, during the break, that song I played was just for you.
Well, I was enjoying it. I was kind of dancing around in the house. Oh, I shouldn't be telling people that.
Yeah, laissez le bon temps relay. You've heard that once or twice,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, I have. It got me to tapping the feet and all and hanging out, which, of course, I like fun music, so I always have.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
Hi, Mr. Montaro.
Hello.
My question to you is, you said you did a stress analysis of Mr. Charles Hall. Was that just something you observed, or was that using some kind of machinery?
Well, I was trained a long time ago in facial recognition, body language, stuff like that. But since then, I have learned voice stress analysis using stress meters. Now, you know, a lot of people, when I first started using this in the field, were worried we were using this as a lie detector. We're not looking to tell if people are telling the truth or not. We'll usually find that out soon enough in deep interviews. What I'm looking for when you hear me talk about stress meters is, Charles Hall was doing a lecture. A lecture he's done many times, by the way. So, you know, you would think this is somebody, if he was lying, or he didn't believe this story, and this is something he said many, many times, the meter wouldn't even register. There would have been no stress in his voice at all. It would have been nice, smooth, you know. Like what I'm talking right now, if the meter was on right now, we'd be staying somewhere around 5 or 6. Nice and steady, you know. My voice is just going along with this nice monotone, and that's where it would be. But there were certain things that he would say that would instantly, the meter would flash, the meter would stress. There was physical stress in his voice. He was reliving the event at the time he was saying it. So yes, I was actually using the meters. There is a copy of this available on I think the old iCar site, iCar1.homestead.com, not the new site. We videotaped the meters when we put it up so everybody could see what we were talking about. Matter of fact, when we do hypnosis recovery, when we're doing recovered memories and stuff like that, while we're doing the hypnosis, the voice stress meter is actually going and the cameras are actually recording everything that goes on. So when we do make them public, you get to hear how we do our regressions. You also get to see the meters, and you'll be amazed because even when someone's in deep hypnosis, if there's real stress there, the meters will peak. There's no ifs, ands, or buts, any buts about it at all. The meters will start to peak if there's any real stress there. It just goes along, you know, like when most hypnosis, when you hear me talking, the meter hardly moves. When I'm doing the regression, putting people on there, you'll watch the meters. It's kind of boring to watch. It's not even hardly, the needles aren't even hardly moving, unless we're using digital, and the digital's not moving. once the person starts talking, you'll know, like, when we're walking them down the beach and into the fog and all to get ready to go into the regression, the meters will hardly be moving when they're talking back to me, or when they're doing countdowns, you know, counting yourself lower down, the meters won't be moving. But when you get to the recall of what's actually going on, when you say, please describe the event to me of the night of December 1st, 1989, and they start describing it, then you see the meters start to move. You know, you'll start when they talk about a particular event or a particular type of being or a particular type of craft, you'll see the stress in the meters. So see, what now to, if to tell someone was lying or telling the truth there, if the meters weren't moving, I would think that they were false memories. But since the meters were jumping off the charts, it really does make me think there is a physical stress there. Still doesn't mean it's aliens, by the way, but there is some kind of a stress associated with the event, which makes me think that something physically actually happened. What it is, though, is still up for argument, if that made any sense.
Let me throw this in too, Jerome. Law enforcement does use psychological stress evaluation as a test to see if the person is deceiving them. But it only works that way if you construct the questions that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure that you are familiar with polygraph, right, Jerome?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I'm going to tell you something that has been done with polygraph that has nothing to do with whether the person is telling the truth or not. Polygraph test was over. The investigators had asked that the guy, now this is not a case I worked on, nor was it at my agency. It's one that I was told, the whole class was told when I was in police academy. They asked that he just be left hooked up for a few minutes after the actual polygraph test was over. And they'd given instructions that the polygraph operator not take any notes. Okay? But they had a map up on the wall of their county. They were looking for a deceased body. They thought this guy knew something about it. But he had been passing, he had already passed a polygraph test. And they'd ask him to take another one. Looked like he had probably passed that one. And so they came in and they were just chatting with him about nonsense. One of the investigators went over and looked at the map and just put his finger up on the map and started moving his finger around the map and not making any comment. And at one point, the polygraph needles jumped. The other investigator was watching the polygraph needles, and he was watching where on the map that happened. Guess where they found the body?
I bet they found it right there.
Yeah. And so he did know about it, but he was able... A lot of people can. They can pass a polygraph test and, you know, show no deception. I, on the other hand, have had to take a number of polygraph tests because of the type of employment I was in. From time to time, they have you do a polygraph test. And, you know, it was inconclusive on things like, was I telling the truth about my name?
But it's weird how polygraphs are sometimes.
Yeah, as far as I know, my name is Kevin Smith. I mean, that's what I've always been told. And, you know, so as far as I know, and that's what's on my birth certificate, which I do have. And all my documents, everything says Kevin Smith. They asked me, and it showed possible deception. You know, is your name Kevin Smith? Yes, possible deception. So I don't know. I don't have a lot of confidence in them when they're being used to determine truth. But if it's stress, it does register stress.
Yeah, it does, and it registers stress well too. It's that's part of a polygraph is registering the stress. But still, you know, people always freak out. None of what we're talking about is conclusive, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, it can be used as a tool. But I've passed many polygraphs, and I was definitely lying when I passed them. so, you know, I'll tell you a little secret I learned early on. If I take a polygraph, I'll usually go out and, like, have a couple of drinks the night before, and then I'll come sit in the thing, and I'll let them hook me up, and then I will find a spot on the wall, a little bitty tiny spot on the wall, and that's all I will focus on, that spot. Even when they're asking me questions, the only thing I'm really thinking about is that spot. Man, they get so aggravated with me because I go into that monotone voice. Nothing moves. We can't. I like the guy. He's unpolygraphable. But I've also failed some polygraphs. So you really have to be on your game if you're going to pass one. But they are passable. You can lie through them. You can lie through anything.
Some people can. I can't even tell them the truth and pass them without a question mark, you know. And I tell them every time I've told them the absolute truth as I knew it. Especially stuff like, you know, is your name Kevin Smith? And, you know, possible deception.
Well, on one of them, they told me I was lying about my birthday. And I was like, really? And a guy said, well, you lied. You're just trying to fool the test. So I pulled out my driver's license and said, am I lying? And then a guy stood there and scratched his head for 5 minutes. He didn't know what to think.
Yeah.
And I was like, but hey, you know. But and they, I have been known to turn it around on. So.
Yeah, but they do register stress. And they're really good for that, so you can see not only that there's stress happening, but what the level and intensity of that stress might be. All right, Jerome, you got another question or comment?
No, Kevin, that's it. And thank you, Mr. Mataro, for being a guest.
Thanks Bye-bye. For calling in.
All right. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. You know, the tall whites, I want to kind of go back to that. Now, the lines are open, folks. Jump in here. You know, if you got a question or a comment about something else, and, you know, we're talking about the tall whites, doesn't matter. Go ahead and call. 623-444-5889. If you're east of the Rockies, 623-444-5889. If you're west of the Rockies, same number. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
You're north of the Rockies there, aren't you?
Me?
And that doesn't matter. Go ahead.
Joe, Kevin, I'm going to go back to the first thing you were discussing.
Okay, John Vasquez.
The thing about the... what is it? Telling why you don't want them to reveal stuff that is confidential, classified, confidential, or classified. Or
classified. Whatever. Classified.
Yeah, classified.
Yeah.
I look at it this way. Kevin, I know Kevin can identify it, and you might be able to also, Joe. I've been there. I'm not afraid of death. But I do have something I want to do. So why screw it up?
Well, you know, they never threaten me. I've got to be honest with you. What they usually do to me, I was on a roll for a couple of years. I was really dumping a lot of information into the field, making a lot of enemies, by the way. And when they threatened me, when they came to my job site, I was working a crew of 20 people. So that's how many witnesses there were to this. And I know Kevin's heard this story before, but when they came to my job site, they didn't threaten me. They said, you know, your wife's home alone, so your child's got to go to school. You know, y'all are on the road a lot. That wasn't a threat aimed at me. That was a threat aimed at my family because they really kind of figured threatening me was a waste of time. I was going to do what I wanted anyway, and that's what it was. Mm-hmm. But threatening my family was not. You know, that was and they knew right off the bat. Whoever this was very smart, very well educated. The two guys that approached us that day were very well dressed, very well manicured, the whole nine yards. I call them pretty boys with guns, but still. They knew it. Their voices never raised. It was always a nice monotone pitch. This is typical Men in Black stuff. I mean, it was like, hello, Mr. Montaldo. We wanted to tell you we really agree with what you're doing, but please do not talk about the alien agenda anymore. And then proceeded to tell me why not to talk about it. You know, there was no doubt when they left, I understood what they meant. You know, mm-hmm. leave this topic alone or someone close to you, something will happen to it. They were very pointed about it. They were very, and in all fairness, you know, it's one of the topics we don't talk about as much as we do other stuff, unless we get information dumped in by one of them and then we discuss it. But that's really what the threats was. It wasn't on me, but they do threaten people. You know, some people don't have families. A lot of guys are single bachelors that are older, so a lot of their families passed away already. So someone like John, they may have went after directly.
Well, he has family.
Yeah, I know, but I was just saying that as an example. But mm-hmm. they may have went after him directly because he may not have stopped. You know, some people just because they have family don't mean they're going to stop. They're going to keep going, especially if they think it's something they have to get out. One of the things I learned in this field early on, there's something that drives a lot of these people that is unexplainable. I've watched people ruin lives, ruin marriages, break up families, do things that they would not know, lose careers. I watched one of the highest priced lawyers in this state blow his career, his family, and his kids over this field. There's no even any explanation why he did it. Now he's known as the Orb Master. I don't understand what it is. It's just something that drives. And so in John's case, I don't think even if they threatened John, he was going to slow down. I think he was headed for what he wanted to head for, and he felt a real need to get this information out.
You've heard me say on the air, you know, if you're going to threaten that you're going to kill me, you're going to have to do better than that. I mean, I've already been, you know, face to face with it many times, and. You know, and I've been dying since the day I was born, and you're going to threaten that I'm going to die? That doesn't affect me. But that isn't how they do it. Mm-hmm. They just very gently talk about people you love.
Yeah, they're not, you know, everybody always thinks, because they're Hollywood version, they think they're going to come up and beat you up and throw you around. No, that's not what they're going to do. They're very well-mannered and very to the point. I mean, when they leave, you know exactly what's on their minds. Mm-hmm. And if you want to go on from that point, well, then you know there's some risk involved. And, you know, sometimes they may not do something. They may even let it go for years and then one day say, hey, you know what? We warned you. Guess what? Bam. and the way it goes or whatever happens. It is one of the things working about this field, and you know, I have been saying this for a long time, but most old ufologists go crazy. They've been in the field like 20 or 30. I don't even going to mention nobody's names, because someone may be speaking at somewhere this weekend, so I'm not going to mention any names. But I can tell you about 15 ufologists that started in this career with really noble ideas and have wound up as people's personal prophets and stuff. So don't ask me what happens. I'm hoping I'm not one of those. I don't want to go crazy. I will retire if that's what they want. I'll just retire.
And Brent, my defense is I'm not a ufologist.
Yes.
I'll never go crazy.
Radio announcer.
That's it. I've been nuts my whole life. Crazy.
I look at it this way. If they're going to threaten me, I'll put it to them this way. You kill me, you sign a contract between me and you. I'm dead. I have the right to do anything I want to with your life and your soul. Do you really want to risk it?
In other words, you're going to haunt them.
That's right.
But see, it might be a hybrid. He might just contain you in one of them things and put you on his shelf. Man, you got to be careful with that kind of stuff. The very advanced technologies may not work well with paranormal events. Since there do seem to be a coincidence, or whatever you want to call it, between some sightings and some abductions and some paranormal stuff. Contactees, I think, can manifest poltergeists, which is a weird thing in itself. I'm not sure.
Do you do that, Brent?
No.
No?
I just like scaring the heck out of them, make them think before they act.
Yeah.
Well, you know, here's the thing. When you're dealing with these people that Joe's talking about, you're not going to scare them.
No.
There's not anything you can do that's going to scare them. There's not much you can do that's going to scare somebody like me. And that doesn't mean that I think I'm invincible. I know I'm not. It's just, you know, there's not much you can do that's going to scare me. There are many things that can be done to cause me a great deal of concern, but not if you're threatening me. If you threaten me, my attitude, you want to threaten me? What are you waiting for, an appointment? I'm right here right now.
You said prepare to fight.
Well, I mean, you know, if you feel froggy, jump, you know?
Yeah.
You've heard that in Louisiana, haven't you, Joe?
Oh, yeah, Ken. Yeah, you feel... you know, I was looking at this picture. You remind me of one of these blues guys down in the quarter with your guitar, man. I was thinking you'd fit right in down there. Playing at the little bar late at night, you know, 3 a.m. and sipping a little booze.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. Y'all can't see what I'm seeing. But...
Well,
video people can.
Brent, you've seen it. It's a picture of me with my sunshades on. Oh, well, wait a minute. Let me just do it, man. Let me put my sunshades on. Everybody on TV can see me now, see? And he's saying I look like the Blues Brothers.
Yeah. I just downloaded some more of their music the other day, too. And what's that one about New Orleans? I just downloaded it the other day.
But, see, Brent, you're never going to scare these guys. You know, the best you can hope to do is inform them they have failed to scare you. But then they're not. They know that. They're going to do what Joe described. They're going to
go after the people you love.
Yeah, they're going to go after the people you love. See, I have a right to decide what I'm going to do with my life. I don't have a right to decide what's going to happen to my wife or to my son or to my other kids, you know. That's up to them. It's not up to me to make a decision that they're going to, have some tragic accident. I should not do that. And this is why I tell people when they start to tell me something, and they you heard me do it with Command Sergeant Major James Norton, and he would start to say something, I would say, no, don't say that on the air.
Don't tell them where you have this stuff stashed. Don't tell them where your family is. Don't do any of that stuff. I remember that show.
Yeah, and but this is why. I took a lot of flack for that. Well, if you know, you ought to tell it. Well, pardon me, but Toro Kaka.
Yeah.
When you have other people's lives in your hands, you and you don't care, man, that's psychopathic. When other people are concerned, you have to care, and you have to be careful what you say.
When I'm 100, when I make 100, I'm going to turn over the alien agenda information we've collected to another researcher inside the organization. Maybe they'll have better luck putting it out.
But see, there's a lot of stuff, though, Brent, that you can say that takes people right up to the doorway. Those who are supposed to know will know. They'll get it. And they will research it, and they will know. And those that are confirmed mushrooms will just let it pass.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah, most of the sheeples that we listen to these days, or see these days.
Brent, I got to run. Thanks for the call, man.
Yep, goodbye.
All right, bye. 623-444-5889, but we have a break coming up. Right after this break, we'll take some more calls. Don't go away.
Thank you.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And my guest this evening, Joe Montaldo. Joe, we have a caller online, so let's go straight to the telephone. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. This is John from Conroe.
Hello, John.
Just wanted to make a comment with regard to Tall White and Charles Hall. I've been following him for a number of years, and he seems incredibly sincere. The only thing that makes me a little bit skeptical are some of the theories that he's came up with regarding propulsion and energy, you know, that he came up with later. But I think initially he might have been giving a good report on what he witnessed, because he was an observer.
Well, so you know,
I wanted to comment on.
Yeah, okay, so let's discuss that just a moment. Have you read his paper, the Hall Photon Theory?
I haven't read it, but I've heard him discuss it.
You ought to read it. Now, and you can, I think you can download that online somewhere. It used to be there, and if you don't have it, I think I've got it somewhere. It's very, very interesting. But now, it is a theory. You know, and he's not saying that that is how this stuff works. He's saying he thinks this is at least in part how it works. So, you know, it's a theory. He still does classified work, doing radiation measurements from things in space. And he is, you know, he's a nuclear physicist. Although he does not have his doctor's degree, he is a nuclear physicist, and a, you know, a nuclear scientist. And so the paper, what he's done is, it will be above a lot of people's heads, but he's written, he's done his best to write it in terms layman can understand. So it's challenging, but it's certainly readable. And you being a scientist, it's not going to be all that challenging for you to read. But it'll be very interesting for you, because he does, he makes that one eyebrow go up and you go, you know?
Well, that part is true. You know, he has definitely tweaked my attention.
Yeah. You know, I have some statements that I make where people cock an eyebrow and go, I got to think about that. And, you know, I'm not a physicist at all. It's just an observation on my part. And you've heard me talk about it, E equals MC squared. Well, you don't get real energy out of a theoretical quadrupedal. If it's a real, if that equation is correct, then you have to be able to square the speed of light. And I don't think the equation is correct. And I'll tell you why. The reason I don't think it's correct is you can't run it backwards.
Well, you know, they just introduced, was it 4 days ago, they're gonna vary the speed of light. They're saying it's not a constant anymore.
No, it's not.
So it's finally not. Science seems to be making some progress, which, of course, this changes a lot of things when light speed is no longer a constant in the known universe. It's out now. I don't know what they're going to do about it or what they're going to say about it, but it is out. And I see it's picking up steam and across the, you know, science is one of my favorite things to keep up on. And it does seem to be making a speed. It's funny because Michio Kaku was on about 2 years ago, and we actually, it was one of the subjects we actually talked about, was his light speed, a set speed. He didn't seem to think it was even then.
Yeah, so we talked about that when he was on my show.
Yeah, so, I mean, he seems to be ahead of the curve on that. And, you know, I noticed he likes hosts that know science, by the way. I think it makes his trip to your show a more pleasurable experience when he's not having to dumb everything
off down. Air, we talked about my theory, or my the way I think is that the universe is a sphere. It has a shape and it's a sphere. And that's because if what scientists tell us about every single thing in the universe is energy, and it's all vibrating, and I have no problem with that. It's all made up of atoms and subatomic particles, and it's all vibrating. It's all frequency. All frequencies have a wave, and all waves have harmonics. And every harmonic is itself a wave giving off harmonics. Therefore, you wind up with nothing but a sphere, a ball. You have harmonics going in every direction, 360 degrees by 360 degrees. Therefore, you wind up with a sphere. And he kind of paused. This was off air. And he said, I'm going to have to think about that. You've given me something to think about.
he's a lot of fun to talk to.
He is.
We introduced, he is.
Have you ever talked with him, John?
Charles Hall?
No. Michio Kaku.
No.
No, yeah, because he's a great interview. He's a lot of fun. And first off, I'm grateful he'll come on my show and do UFO stuff, which was strange to start off with talking to him about that. But, you know, I brought him on to help people understand the hardcore science to, you know, possible faster than light travel, wormhole travel. And I brought up the stepping stone theory to him, and we got into a great conversation, and we walked it out. And he really liked it because, you know, I was explaining it to him as we were going on. I said, have you ever heard about the stepping stone for colonization? And he was really kind of like, nah, not so much, you know, because we had been talking about fast and light travel and wormhole technologies, things like that. And I said, you know, well, we build a base on the moon, then we build a place out on Zone 11, then we build a base on Mars, then we put one on one of the moons around Io and Jupiter. I mean, one of the moons of Jupiter, Saturn, maybe both. Put another one out near the Oort cloud, and then we'll put one between us about 1.5 light years out between us and Proxima Centauri, about halfway out. We'll put a base there. Then bam, another year and a half of light speed, we'll put another base at Proxima Centauri. So now what you have is a set of relays between us and Proxima Centauri. Now it's going to probably take the average person, even of half a light speed, 5 to 8 years to get there. But it's not going to be like you think, because what's going to happen is Joe's going to go out to Mars. Later on, he's going to get transferred out to Titan. Later on, he's going to get transferred out to the Oort cloud. Later on, he's going to get transferred out to halfway. Next thing he knows, 15 years down the line, he's at Proxima Centauri living at the new colony. And that's really the way we will probably initially start to colonize. We can already get to half-speed light. And now with the new drive coming out, what they said, 30 days to Mars now?
Yeah.
And that's a conservative estimate. So we're making progress. Most people don't realize we don't have to go faster than light to explore our whole known galaxy. Yes, it is 100,000 light years across, and even at the speed of light, it would take 100,000 years across. But wait a minute now. Humans have already been alive for 2 million years, which means we could have, even at half light speed, we could have explored it 100,000 times. So a billion years from now, 2 billion years from now, like the Greys, we'll have colonies all over the place. So we'll be jumping from one point to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. But we will have effectively explored the entire known galaxy and never have gone faster than the speed of light.
But we don't. The speed of light is the minimum speed limit. It's not the max.
I think it is.
It's the minimum. Look, now, John, I think you probably would disagree with me on this, and feel free to, but the speed of dark is much faster than the speed of light. If you go 1 centimeter per second, one centimeter per second faster than the speed of light, you have reached the speed of dark. And the reason the natural state of the universe is dark is because it's expanding faster than the speed of light.
Yeah, that's a good
point. Well, that may be true. I haven't explored that.
And, you know, if we ever learn to travel at the speed of dark, we're there. Bam. We're there.
Well, eventually we'll learn how to go faster than light for sure. I mean, it'll take us time. We'll build engines that eventually will achieve those speeds. I mean, what is it, 144,000 feet per second? Or is it 188? I always get it confused.
186,000 some odd miles per second. Yeah.
And so, I mean, yes, we'll eventually get there. It'll take us a while, but eventually we'll get there.
I want a car that can go one-tenth.
I know, huh? It's a but
John,
but
would that be a drive or what?
That'd definitely be a cruiser.
But light speed, you know, we're not going to use that inside of our own solar system anyway. It'd be too dangerous, all our rocks and debris. And see, my biggest problem is I've never had a problem. I've never even thought, most physicists I talk to don't really have a problem with going faster than light speed. For them, they really think the thing is building a sensor that can go 1,000 times the speed of light speed, so it can be mapping you as you're darting yourself through the galaxy. Mm-hmm. That, they think, is going to be the real challenge, not the actual speed. And so what's going to initially happen is you're going to have to go explore everything at slower speeds, map out everything, learn where the black holes are, learn where the gravitational wells are, learn where the suns are, learn where the moons are, get the whole map of the galaxy and how it moves and how everything's moving and pulsating through it, so you know you're not going to be running into suns while you're...
Part of the problem, and John, correct me on this if I'm wrong, part of the problem was sensors for light speed or faster than light speed. Part of the problem of having sensors that can operate there is all the sensors we know anything about operate on electricity, which travels at light speed.
Yeah, we have some limits.
Mm-hmm.
So we will have to develop something that can travel fast and light speed. But we don't even have to do that if we really don't want to. We can set up relay stations between us and anywhere we go that are constantly sending signals, just like we do in the ocean for ships.
Okay. Today. Now, having said that, I'm going to ask both of you, do you think Earth is a relay station for alien civilizations? Is that why they're coming here? It's a relay station.
It's possible.
Sure.
Being where we are, you know, it always fascinates me because, you know, we're an older galaxy. We're 5 billion, our solar system's 5 billion years old, and we're way, 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 way out on a spiral. I don't even think most humans, technically, we're not even really in the Milky Way, guys. I mean, we're so close to the edge that even if someone spit, we could go sailing out of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it is funny because there's been a lot of argument about the Sagittarius galaxy that the Milky Way is eating right now. You know, a lot of scientists seem to think that deposit is here. And then recently you said, oh, no, that's not true. But now I notice a group out of Helsinki are saying, no, that is true. We were deposited here by the Sagittarius galaxy. Something to do with all the red dwarfs that are nearby all came from this galaxy, and they happen to be surrounding us. So the question is, how could they have all got there and we still be part of the Milky Way? You know, so more and more of it, it's looking like that Earth was deposited here about 1.3 billion years ago.
Let me get back to John for just a minute. And John, I want to go back to the tall whites. What do you think is the deal with this story of the tall whites? If you think it's real, what's your assessment of where you think they may have come from?
Well, I don't know where they came from, but I don't think that they're grays.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're a separate species, simply because of the behavior patterns that Charles Hall has described. And
well, nothing in their behavior would separate them from grays. Not even having children would separate them from grays. So
well,
you need
not
more
a,
than
this
that.
Is not about an argument, you know, about, you know, necessarily linked to behavior. But they appear to be a separate species and not associated with the grays.
Well, they only appear to be that way because Charles Hall describes them that way as a separate species.
That is true, but I think that he was a good observer.
I do too, but unfortunately, the time era we're talking about, there was a lot of drugs used for cover memories back there, and there was a lot of experimentation.
Well, I don't think he was doing drugs.
Well, I don't know if he was or he wasn't. That's the whole point. There's something when a lot of the experts listen to Charles Hall talk, there's something that, and it's, I'm not the only one. Most everybody in the field has a problem with this case.
All right, we have to take a break, but we'll pick up there when we come back. And, John, you want to listen on air to the rest of that response?
Yeah, I'll listen on air. Right. Thanks. Have a good evening.
Thank you. All right, folks, we shall return right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach, and that means we only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. Joe, I want to let you finish what you started to say, but you'll have to keep it kind of short because we do have a call holding.
That's fine. They basically, all I was saying was, is it seems for some reason, when I listen to Charles, I'm with the gentleman who called in. I believe what he's saying. But then, and being a 30-year veteran researcher, especially into alien abductions and alien contact, there's something not right, too. I can't deny the fact that there's something not quite right with this whole setup. There's just something that seems to be off, especially knowing the other three types of races that are visiting the planet and what they're doing and what they're up to and the amount of people involved. I can't see where they would allow another race to hang out on a planet unchecked and not be aware of them.
Well, there is that interesting comment that one of your contactees brought back, and the answer they got when they asked their contact, alien contact, about the tall whites, the answer they got was, it's not what you think.
Yeah, and it isn't what you think. So that's the whole point. I mean, there's no way for us to really know. We can only go by Charles Hall, and we do, I mean, thanks to me, at least he's got other witnesses to back up that there is another race looking like this. But our problem is we just don't know if it's a hybrid race, which I'm with Kevin, I really don't think it's a hybrid race, but knowing that there are tall whites and there are tall and skinny and lanky, it's a hard one. It really is. And then there's the thing about the real thin and hair and the frail bodies. You know, a lot of abductees do describe hybrids that way. Maybe it's a hybrid between a gray and something else, as far or one of the other human races. See, people make a big mistake here.
We're going to need to get to the phone here.
Well, go ahead.
Okay, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and she didn't hang on.
Sorry.
All right, 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. And we do have time for one more call.
Squeeze it in, guys.
Yeah. So, but you got to be dialing like now, okay?
Yeah.
I don't know what they are, but like I say, you know, I've talked like you. I've talked with Charles Hall on a number of occasions. He's been on the show on a number of occasions. I've talked to him in person more than once, and I think the guy is truthful.
I just don't know what the scope
of this story is, but I think he's truthful. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, can you hear me? This is Joni in St. Louis.
Yes, Joni, go ahead.
I have a bad cutout situation, but I have a quick question regarding the hypersonic Mach 15 you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
You know, Dr. Greer's group goes out to those CE5 groups, and they're seeing things in the sky. And I've often wondered whether they're not seeing our own technology.
They are a lot of times.
I would agree. A lot of times they are. But let me tell you something that I have said on this show. Anybody that tells you, well, look, 95% of that stuff is our stuff, is lying to you. Now, I'm going to tell you how you know they're lying. For a person to know that to be a true statistic, they would have to have a clearance higher than exists.
They really would, too.
And if they have it, they're not going to tell it.
I can help y'all out with this a little bit. A good friend of mine, Melinda Leslie, does Skywatch tours in Sedona, Arizona at the Center for New Age Studies. She's taken out now 195 tours. Only one time did they not get something on the night scopes at night. Now, granted, she'll tell you, you know, sometimes she gets a sense that it's ET, sometimes it might be something else. So they're not jumping to conclusions that this is alien or us. But admittedly, there's a lot of something flying around in the sky that if she can take out tours on 195 occasions and see something, 194, granted, there's a lot flying around. And I do think a lot of it's ours, but I do think a lot of it is other people's, or maybe people's not the right word there.
Well, they are. They're just not human. But the thing is, Joni, a lot of what people see is our stuff. but by no means is 95% of it our stuff.
Actually, I just personally don't think we have that much stuff to fly around, to be honest with you. And besides, we've got places to fly. There's secluded parts of the oceans we can fly over. There's parts of our deserts. There's lots of places the U.S. could fly and not be seen if that's what they wanted to do.
Absolutely.
But thanks to UFO people, they can fly wherever they want now because everything is a UFO.
Joni, you had another comment?
Follow-up question. Mm-hmm. Did you say that what we do have, they could get to Russia in 8 minutes?
We were talking about it's an Aurora-type craft that can leave Los Angeles flying across the country, not flying over the Pacific, but flying across the country over the Atlantic and get there in about 8.5 minutes. But what they're doing is they're kind of cheating is what they're doing. Most people don't know it. Like in space, you can watch the planet go around about 36 times in any given day. The planet's moving one way, the plane's moving the other day. So when it breaks orbit, it's all but about 2 minutes. The planet's then moved underneath. They can come straight back down and drop straight into wherever they're going. So really, it's not so much that the plane's going as fast as it sounds. It's the way it does it. It arcs into space and then drops back in. Right now, a ballistic missile from Russia takes about 26 minutes to get to, like, Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And that's just a standard rocket. That's nothing fancy.
Okay, Joni.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you. You know, these space planes, that's something that Reagan was talking about that he wanted developed. And I bet you at the time it was already developed.
Oh, yeah. Thanks to the SR-71, I learned one thing. Back in the 50s, not only did we have the technology to go faster than Mach 6, but we even possessed stealth technology. Now, here we are, 60 years later, and we still haven't invented anything that goes faster than the SR-71 Blackbird. Yeah. Y'all just keep believing that. Matter of fact, if y'all believe that, I got some land for sale in New Orleans, and let me tell y'all what, it didn't get no water from Katrina either. So come on down, let me sell you that right now. For a good price, too, only about $500,000, you know, come on down.
Well, you know, it's the real scope and shape of things is far, far different than most people imagine. And, you know, our universe is far different than people imagine. But even just our Earth and realities here on this planet, far, far different than people imagine. And by the time they wake up, the train will have left the station. Joe, I want to thank you for being with us this evening. It's always a pleasure to have you. And as I said, we had, you know, people writing in saying, when are you going to have Joe Montaldo again? And so for those of you who wrote in, I hope you were among the ones who called. And if not, why not? And you got to ask yourself, you know, you tried to get in, you couldn't get in. That's one thing. You didn't even try. What's the deal? You a chicken? Joe bites, you know. Joe bites. You got to watch him.
I do. And I enjoy coming on with you. Sorry for the potty mouth at the beginning. Y'all wasn't paying attention. But, hey, I love coming and hanging out with Kevin. It's always great. You got lots of fun callers. I always have a good time when I'm here. I can't say that about everywhere I go speak either. So that's a good thing.
Well, I'm glad you have a good time here. We do have a good crowd. Great, great people. You know, it's like my family. It really, really is like my family. Joe, if you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment as we bring this in for a landing. Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Montaldo, and always a pleasure to have him on the show. Remember that the show is 100% listener-supported, and it only takes missing the budget 1 month, and we're gone. Well, it's crunch time. There's a donate button over on the website, kevinsmithshow.com. Click that. Anywhere from $1 to $1 million, we'll take it. Okay. Anything, whatever you can help with, just click donate and make sure we're still here tomorrow. Okay? My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.